What's up, everybody? You're listening to No Coast Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we are so happy to be back with you for another week of No Coast Cinema. Took a little break there. Had to take a personal week.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of that transition cold now that we're going into, you know, fall, winter sort of season. Had a little trouble there, but we made it.
Yeah, it's creeping in. That's for sure.
I know. And I feel like I haven't seen you in forever, Connor.
Yeah. It's been 2 weeks.
It's been. It's been a little while. But, you know, a lot of great movies have come out. And we wanted to take today's episode to talk a little bit about, I don't know, the conversation around movies, the way we talk about movies. And I think there's no better time to do it. And no better guest to talk to than Mr. Blake Stubbs, a frequent contributor to WGN. And a movie critic in his own right. He goes by sometimes Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, one of his aliases, wouldn't you say, Blake?
Yeah, definitely, especially on the WGN airwaves. That's how most people would know me. But yeah, critic, lover of cinema, especially the industry. I love following the news and what's going on, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but definitely one of those where I'm happy to be here. I'm glad to get to talk movies with guys who love to talk movies. It's one of the few things that I get to do daily, but it is one of those things that I love to do.
Absolutely. And I will say that it's always a pleasure to hear Mr. Blake Stubbs on WGN Radio showing up all over the place. So I'm glad that we were able to all get together in this sort of consortium of cinema lovers. All right. So what we're going to do is I guess we'll start with the biggest thing that has happened this past week in cinema, which is the release of Justice League, DC's latest entry into their DC Extended Universe, their attempt to bring it all back together, finally make it all happen for them, get in on a little bit more of that superhero market. They were doing pretty well financially, but the critics were panning it. Aside from Wonder Woman, pretty much all of the DC Extended Universe movies have been critically reviled. Wouldn't you say so, Connor?
Yeah, and the box office performances have always been pretty good.
Yeah, until now, Connor, yeah. You just mentioned to me that this has been their lowest opening for a movie.
Yeah, and this is basically their Avengers,
if
to draw a parallel between the Marvel Universe, and they're 5 years behind Marvel, and critical reception has not been good for Justice League.
Absolutely. Blake, have you seen Justice League?
I did. I caught a screening of it yesterday, a matinee, actually, if you can call it that on a Saturday. Usually that's a Sunday term for many. But no, I definitely saw it with a, I wouldn't say a packed house, but I saw it with a decent sized crowd. I can see why critics don't like this movie. I can see many reasons why there's big parts of it I don't like. But there's nuggets in there that I think are getting, you know, they're just being left in the dust. And everybody's just talking about, oh, how bad it is. And, oh, the big Rotten Tomato, you know, Rotten Tomatoes didn't release the rating number before the release. But, you know, critical reviews were out there. So I said it's like harkening back to a time prior to Rotten Tomatoes where we didn't have, you know, an aggregate of where to go to look at, you know, what are critics saying. We had to go find our favorite critics and actually read their reviews, which was a welcome change in a way, I guess. But, yeah, no, I caught it. I have thoughts. I guess is the
right.
easiest thing to say.
Let's get some of your thoughts right off the bat. Now, I've seen it. Connor has not seen it.
I've read a lot of reviews, though.
That is true. You've read a lot of reviews. Personally, I absolutely hated it. I left with 20 minutes still left in the movie because I was just like, it was like right before the big battle sequence, I threw up my hands and said, I just don't care. I just don't care what happens from this point on. I really just had a very poor experience, and I shared that on Facebook. I said that Justice League is not so much a movie as it is a litmus test for how much audiences are willing to put up with in a blockbuster movie. I will say that I do agree with what you said about their nuggets. They're little bits that I thought were really interesting, and I'm curious to hear what those nuggets were for you.
Well, it kind of goes right back to things that I did like about Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice. Now, I'm not saying I liked the whole film. I didn't.
Right.
I didn't like this film. But when you get into Because you're always going to go to that route of comparing it to how Marvel and Disney are doing things. I'm going to try to hold off on doing that and just start by saying that I think each actor who's playing one of these, you know, pivotal characters, Batman, Cyborg, Wonder Woman, Superman, each actor is outstanding. I like them all, who they are, and you know, their talents. I think they fit the characters. The problem is that DC is not doing a good enough job across now multiple films and crossovers and everything of doing what their contemporaries have done correctly, which is build likable characters in films that can just kind of stand on their own, and they don't even have to be great. They just need to serve a purpose. And then when you bring the team together, much like this is the DC Universe's Avengers film, it should be fun and enjoyable, and we should be, you know, aching for it. Everything feels rushed. You know, we're getting Cyborg really for the first time. Mm-hmm. We're getting Flash for the first time. Ben Affleck's audition for his Batman and his Bruce Wayne, I am a huge fan. Now, I know some people aren't, but that's okay. It's okay for us to dislike things. But at the same time, I love what I see, but I haven't been given a full movie of him yet. You know, Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot is just, she's, you know, as far as playing this character, being this character, and her film this, you know, this year being huge, she's 10 out of 10 as far as like what I want to see out of a Wonder Woman and what we should hope to get if we're going to get a good Wonder Woman film and franchise and appearances in films like this. And Henry Cavill's good. He's not bad. He's never been bad.
Well, yeah, I feel
I think there's a whole treatment that is just off.
Yeah, he, I think finally in a lot of the scenes here, he found a lot of the warmth that was missing from Superman. A lot of what makes people gravitate towards Superman is this kind of all-American hero that in Man of Steel and in Batman versus Superman, he just felt so cold. And I feel like now he's kind of leaned into this, like, the big blue Boy Scout. That's who he is, and he needs to kind of play towards that.
Yeah, and I think that the, you know, the tortured soul of Bruce Wayne isn't necessarily what we're seeing. This is a much more paranoid Bruce Wayne. This is a much more, I've been through everything, and now I'm just, you know, I only care about the world, but everything that I do doesn't always reflect that. And I'm going to argue with my teammates, and I'm going to do all these things. It's like, that's not really the Batman that I... Now, look, I'm not a huge DC, you know, aficionado, but that's not the Batman that I expected in a Justice League film. I kind of liked it by the end of this. The one thing, another nugget that I liked, and I know you left 20 minutes, you know, before the end, but I did kind of enjoy the fact that by the end of it, everyone had a core thing that they had to do. I'm not saying that those things were great, nor were they executed properly, or did I really care? Because I also didn't really care what was going on. I didn't feel the stakes were necessary. The villain in this film, you know, just building off of one thing after another, you know, just to berate this film a little more. The villain, Steppenwolf, in this film is voiced by, I believe, Kieran Hines is how you pronounce his name. And he is outstanding. He is a great actor. This is a straight up one-dimensional, I don't care about this villain.
Yeah.
And I kind of know about this villain, you know, from reading comics, from discussing Steppenwolf with other people, his mythos and everything. It isn't a bad one. And you know, if you know anything about him, you know that it leads to a bigger bad. But this was just like, this was the biggest thing that they had to offer, and this is all they did with it. That's how I felt when I left the theater. And I think that that's a huge, you know, injustice, to use a pun, to the audiences that love these characters. I think that it falls flat. And look, I guess there's another thing, and not to like just keep rambling, but one problem is that this film suffered some massive, you know, controversy, and controversy is not even the word, tragedy. In the buildup, you know, Zack Snyder was directing this. He's already helmed two films prior. You know, win, lose, or draw, we're not switching horses midway through the race. And then we had to, because his daughter, you know, took her own life, and it's very sad. And I don't, you know, I appreciate the fact that the man, you know, put family first and did what he needed to do. But then Joss Whedon stepping in, you know, I was hopeful. I really was, because I do enjoy Avengers. Not Age of Ultron as much, but, you know, what he was able to do in taking pre-existing characters, put them into a very big, huge tentpole film. I had hope. I feel like there was just not enough time for them to give us a true Joss Whedon Justice League. And I think we're getting mixtures of the two, and they don't mix too well.
No,
I think that's the easiest way to phrase it.
And there was also that mixture of, you mentioned that there were certain things about the character development and the way that they were portrayed that was maybe not as faithful to your idea of what the characters were. But then I think that you also, again, I have not seen the movie, but I have read a lot of reviews and I do know a decent amount about the DC comic universe. And I just think that maybe there were also some things in the movie that I've read about that were very faithful to the source material, but maybe they shouldn't have been. Like the mother boxes, MacGuffin,
basically. Yeah, the three MacGuffins.
Yeah. It just, that seemed like something that maybe they could have tweaked a little bit, because it works well in a comic book. You know, you're reading it by yourself, right, or whatever. It works well in that kind of a space, but having to say the word mother boxes over and over again and have it be something that you're really trying to like chase after, I don't know. It doesn't sound compelling to me at all.
I completely agree. And I think my ignorance over all of the comics is going to be a downfall in a discussion like this. But like you did point out, sometimes stuff that, you know, reads well doesn't play well cinematically. And we just have to accept that. That's right. Just something that, and I think that they were kind of in a rush. They were trying to make sure that, you know, with a director swap halfway through on the biggest property, there's no way they can't make that date, you know, that November 17th, you know, release date. I think the film suffered for it. I don't think the actors did. I think they get their characters really well. I think that the art design and the look of everyone is great. I know some, you know, I think somebody, I read a piece that ragged on Cyborg looking like he was made up of recycled pieces from Transformers films, but I thought he looked cool. I did. And really, I was paying more attention to the actor than I was, you know, the metallic look, because I actually thought that actor, you know, I thought he was trying. And I think that it's just, you can't overdress it. The script had flaws, the story had flaws, the execution had flaws, but I'm not going to hold the actors accountable for all of that.
No,
I think is where I.
And Zack Snyder is nothing if not a visual stylist. A lot of his shots were just so bright. Well, not bright, but like, I mean, I gotta say, I like the look of the film. I think they fixed a lot of the issues with, I don't know, with the darkness of Batman v Superman and Suicide Squad and
yes,
Man of Steel. And it worked for me. I liked seeing a lot more color. It seems like something that they learned from Wonder Woman, where Wonder Woman, you know, it's okay to have a colorful DC superhero film. It plays well. But I wanted to speak to your point about not having a handle on the mythos of the whole DC universe. Isn't that kind of the point, though? Like, this is supposed to be their coming out party to the general public, really, to get people on board to learn the mythos, and it's introduced to them in such a slipshod way.
I think that is exactly where my gripe is. That's a better way of phrasing what my gripe is that it's not true to what we always know in every aspect, which, you know, is always the dilemma when you make a comic property into a film. And if this was the big audition, the big, hey, this is what we're going to do. Again, you got all these, like I really want a Jason Momoa Aquaman film. I want another Gal Gadot Wonder Woman fan. I'm all about Ezra Miller as the Flash, even though, is it Grant Gustin who plays him on The Flash? I forget his actual.
I'm not entirely sure, but I know we have the CW Flash.
You know what I mean? Like, the CW Flash is a good show. It's a very well liked show, and I know that, you know, a lot of people are like, well, why can't these actors just play it? And all, well, it's because of the stylization that they want to take when they make it into a film. And okay, that's a creative choice. What they've introduced us to, because this is really our first shot at Ezra Miller as the Flash, is a really, I mean, I'm all in. Sign me up. You know, like, they're winning me over in all of these smaller ways, but they can't get the big picture right. Is I think where this just ends up going every time. Now, this is what, the fourth film, you know, Man of Steel. I revisited that recently. I don't dislike it as much as I did at first, but everything since then, I'm not all in. They haven't hooked me.
Yeah,
and they should, because I love these characters. Right?
Absolutely.
Like, it would
be nice to have, you know, Superman back as a cultural figure, because this is basically the way they're going to do it. I mean, not since Christopher Reeves played Superman has that character really captured the imagination of the general public. So it's not like I want these movies to be bad. It's just, you know, it's rare for me. I watch a lot of movies that are just okay. And yeah. I totally would have been cool with Justice League being just okay, or with BVS being just okay and what have you, but they weren't just okay. They were bad. Like, and I've had to explain this to people who have kind of come on the defense of Justice League and said, "Oh, you're overthinking it. It's entertaining. It's, you know, it's really a pretty good movie. It's just about average." And I understand that. I mean, what entertains individual people is going to vary completely. But I know that for me, when I feel compelled to literally walk out of a theater, turn off, you know, whatever streaming service I'm using. I tried to watch BVS again on HBO Go. Couldn't even get through like an hour of it. When I'm that compelled to just stop watching it, then there's got to be something wrong with it. And that's when I start delving deeper, like, what is not hooking me about this?
No, totally. And, you know, to the point of people are like, well, it's entertaining and it just is what it is. My question is it? Because right now you have a counterpoint film that is playing in theaters, that is making money, that has an incredibly high rating, that people are talking about, and that is Thor Ragnarok. And not to hijack our conversation about Justice League, but if that's the point people want to make, you got the exact thing that you're trying to describe as a counterpoint to our dislike of Justice League, sitting in a theater waiting for you to go see it. And maybe you already have, and to be quite honest, you'd want to go see that again rather than see Justice League.
Sure.
If you knew what Justice League was and why it fails and why it doesn't work. And, you know, again, so many things I can like about it, but on the whole, I can't recommend it to people. I'm going to tell them to go see Thor Ragnarok, because I want, if you're going to spend, you know, $10 to $15, or depending on how big the experience is for you at your local theater, you know, you could spend up to $20 for a ticket. It just depends on what you're going to see it in. You know, if it's a big D-box theater or an IMAX or whatever, you want to make sure that you're getting your money's worth. And Thor Ragnarok is the film right now that is sitting, you know, in the same environment, and it's definitely worth your time. So I don't know if that's just, you know, bad selection of when to release. I don't know what that is. But at the same time, I don't feel like someone can just easily say, well, that's entertaining, and so we should, you know, enjoy it. No, I don't have to enjoy it because it didn't entertain me. Now, yeah, parts of it did, sure, but not on the whole.
I think that that has a great bearing on the kind of overall theme that that we wanted to touch on today, is that despite the embattled production of Justice League and all of the hoops that they had to jump mm-hmm. through to get it out with the two-hour runtime that it had, at what it comes down to is, are you going to be able to recommend to people that they spend their money and their time going to see this? And if the answer is no, despite wanting to like it and all of that, it comes down to kind of consumer protection, I think. If you are in a position where people are listening to your opinion, if they respect your perspective on going to see films, that is important. You know, you need to be able to steer people in the right direction.
Right. And I mean, I guess it's for me as a critic, you know, if people ask me, they're like, what did you think about this? Or did you see this? Usually my response is I try to be as short as I can, because I could usually, if it's a movie I don't like, I could take up an hour of their time. And if it's a movie I really like, I could take up even more.
Right.
Because I want to have conversations about film. That's just the way I'm wired. But at the same time, you know, like, this whole thing, I know all the story, you know, Superman's mustache is digitally removed, all these other things. And by the way, it was, but it's not the end of the world, and it's not something people need to focus on. All right. Like, it was a story because it was a story. And what's really sad is that the biggest thing about the film, because if you look at all the posters, if you look at all the trailers leading up to probably within the last month, you know, when they make that final marketing push, Superman wasn't really featured.
Yeah.
And it's because there's supposed to be this unveiling of his return. OK, that was totally spoiled by the, you know, the news of him having of reshoots. And again, I think the word embattled is a very good choice for the production of this film. But also in some ways it may be an understatement, because I feel like all the big, you know, twists, turns, or any kind of points of interest were all blown well before the film even hit theaters.
Well, and that makes it tough, because when you're a critic, people well, or at least the way I grew up with having film critics or any sort of critic really, was that they were the ones in the know. They knew what was happening. They knew like to get how to give the best possible recommendation. But with all this information out there, like, oh, now we already know that Superman is going to come back and he's got a weird CGI upper lip, like, and you learn about the embattled production, how does that change the landscape of recommending movies? Like, do people even look to critics anymore? And individual critics, I mean, not just a tomato meter score or Metacritic, but like, are people looking to legitimate recommendations, or are they just piecing it together themselves?
Right. You know what? That is a huge, huge point to make, because the since the passing of Roger Ebert, okay, now in the Chicagoland area, Richard Roper, Michael Phillips, those are the two big names I always recommend to people. Now, there are more. There are far more. But if you want, you know, easiest access, you got the Chicago Sun-Times and the Chicago Tribune. And you know what I mean? You can read people if you want to read about cinema and what they think. If you, you know, go outside the sphere of just looking at what the tomato meter score is and you start actually reading the critics, like the top critics that are noted, you're going to find there are people who are critics that have similar tastes to you. And this is the thing that I would say, if you're going to spend money to go to a theater, try to find a critic that is just one that you respect, whether you agree with them or disagree with them. And you probably should do both on a regular basis. But try to find somebody who can be sort of your cinematic guide, whether that's me or anybody else. I don't care. I just want people to be making good choices when they go to the movies, because it's not cheap to do.
No,
and at the same time, it should be a fun experience. So, it's hard to say, because for a long time, decades even, at the movies was the number one source.
Right.
That's how people knew what to go see and what not to go see. But because we have such easy access to whether a movie is good or bad based on a very simple metric, it can kind of kill a movie, or it can raise a lot of intrigue and get people to go see it. It can kind of have the adverse effect. Like, a movie could be 0%, but because of the controversy, people are going to go see it.
Yeah, it's almost
they're not
like
going to like it, but they're going to go see it.
Yeah, it's almost like a 0% rating is better than getting a good rating. Like, in terms of, well, I think that's what people were hoping for, maybe, or Paramount was hoping for with Mother, that they leaned hard into that controversy and being like, check out the movie that CinemaScore gave a hard F, like, that people right. just can't swallow.
Well, and again, if you follow, and I know you guys do, but like, if you follow the work of Darren Aronofsky, this is a man who doesn't make movies to placate to audiences.
Right.
This is a man who makes movies that are in some ways art, in some ways his own vision and his storytelling. And he's not here to be your friend. He's here to put something in front of you that you react to, whether it's good or bad. And that's really the core objective. And outside of that, it's, how well did he do it? And he's a very precise filmmaker. So Mother is one of those films where I'm just still sitting here like, yeah, I'm really glad that people, are having reactions to a film. And it's not simply a big comic book film.
Right.
And it's not simply, and here's the thing, on the very positive side, Get Out was a similar experience. This was a film people were reacting to. They were going to see. It had, I think it left Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, it's still there, but I think it left like its theatrical run at about 99% or 98%. So, people can look up the basic metric and say, okay, this movie's really good, but it's being flooded in the media about how it's got something to say, about how well executed it was, and how big of a surprise, to many, the talents of Jordan Peele are, which they shouldn't be. The guy's brilliant. But at the same time, everything about that movie just screamed, I hope that this gets the due that it deserves. And, Mother is sort of the other side of it, where it's like, well, it got the cinematic score or cinema score F, and, audiences are really upset about it. And you can read great Twitter accounts that all they do is dedicate themselves to, retweeting goofy reviews, or like, I left because of this, or, someone threw up next to me, so I left, and it had nothing to do with the movie. Goofy stuff like that. Like, that helps the movie.
Right.
And I don't think people get that. Like, the only way to make sure a movie doesn't get talked about is to not talk about the movie. It will not be played, and it will go into obscurity. But we nowadays don't really have that happen. If something's exceptionally bad, everyone knows about it. If it's exceptionally good, everyone knows about it. What's really hard is for really good films that don't get, the 2,000 or 3,000 screens in the United States, viewing. And you just have to see them when you can. Select theater releases that then come on demand, and maybe people will find it there. And that's the stuff that I always feel bad about, but the industry is the industry, and at least it still always has a platform, you know, to play on streaming services or whatever. I don't know. Like, but going back to Justice League, I guess, like, this is a movie that is, on its best day, it's so middling that it is in the bad, bad, bad territory. And it sucks because for, you know, viewers and people who love these characters, because we are treated to really great casting and some really cool art direction and some really cool world building. But the actual storytelling, you know, making it so that it's engaging and fun and we want more. No, I don't want it.
No,
this is one I just don't want. You know, it's plain and simple. And I hate saying it that way, but it's true.
That's a very mediating review to Justice League because, like I said, I haven't seen it, but I've read a lot of the reviews, and they're all scathing. It's all just
right.
– and I do think that that sort of touches on maybe a trope – not a trope, but just a theme in critical reviews in general. It seems like either people love a movie or they hate a movie. And even if it comes down to like, oh, maybe the movie was middling, like Tom was saying, I do still think that it serves – a critic's purpose nowadays to be polarizing in that way.
I guess it does. And this is a point that I always come back to when someone disagrees with, now I'm not saying you disagreed with what I said because you haven't seen the film yet, but when someone disagrees with what I say, that's totally fine. I don't take it personally. It's whatever. But one thing I learned from Roger Ebert, and I've learned many, like we all have, if we read his reviews, if we saw the films he recommended to us, but I kind of had in the later part of his life, I got to know him a little bit through his film festival here in Champaign, Illinois, where I live currently. And the one thing I picked up from him very early on, and I tried to make it a principle, was every film deserves a fair shake. It deserves a fair shake. So if something's exceptionally bad, yeah, scathe and you know, be very scathing and just burn it in incendiary and just, you know, whatever. It's garbage. But if the film, you know, has certain things that are merits, you got to give it those. And so that's why my review on Justice League is a very hard no. It's a very big, you know, negative review. It's a one-star review. But at the same time, like, my language might be a little fair to it. And that's just because there are things I like about it, but it's not enough to justify telling people to go see it or that it's worth anyone's time.
Well, it goes to show a level of nuance, and I think that's important to keep in film reviews because I think, as you mentioned – learning from Roger Ebert, I think people can go back and look at some of his best writing is him literally just destroying a movie, but it's
correct.
he still has a very new, it's as you said, putting in those positive, credit where credit is due, let's say that, and saying that yeah. There are positives to bad movies and that, like, you know, a fair shake. I really like that. I really like this idea of giving every movie a fair shake instead of just saying, no, this is going to be trash. It could probably be trash, but you never know what you might find because if you're only like, oh, I'll only watch movies that have this percentage of a tomato meter rating, you're going to be missing out on a lot of movies that are good but not perfect.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, you're going to run into, you know, talking, if you're one who loves to talk about cinema, be it someone listening to us now or us, you know, even when the mics are off, the whole point of, you know, Justice League being a bad movie and us, you know, sort of trying to give it the fair shake and give it the credit it deserves and all that stuff, it's important because, look, if all you do is want to be a contrarian and down talk a bad film, cool. Like, I'm going to get really bored listening to or talking to you very quickly. And I want to make sure that, you know, you at least paid attention to the film and you didn't just write it off like right away. Now look, Tom, I totally get why you left, by the way. that's not what I'm talking about. I probably would have left, but my girlfriend was with me, and to be quite honest, she doesn't see a lot of the superhero films, so she wanted mindless entertainment. And she
sure.
got it. She didn't, and she was like, I didn't really like it, but I didn't like want to leave. And if that's, you know, a good solid review from somebody who went in kind of blind and didn't know, I'd say that's a pretty fair shake. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
The idea of let's not, like, because here's the thing with this movie, you know, the trailers didn't hook me. So automatically I've got expectations and ideas. And if all I do is sit there and stew on these negative, you know, impressions and ideas, that's how I'm going to feel about the movie in the end. It just is. I think that, you know, one of the things that we as moviegoers, and this is anyone, we have to make sure that we don't fall victim too heavily to, you know, the marketing campaigns. that sometimes for great films, the marketing is really bad. And sometimes for, you know, really bad films, the marketing can be really kick-ass. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
that's true. Those Suicide Squad trailers were amazing. Like, yeah. Those are some of the best trailers I've ever seen for Suicide Squad.
And to your point earlier that you made about how the kind of the marketing for Justice League sort of ruined the reveal that Superman was going to be in it. Warner Brothers has done that with almost all of the DC movies, I feel like. They spoiled Wonder Woman being in Batman versus Superman. They spoiled the return of Superman, even though it was, you know,
it was kind of
obvious at the end of BVS. But.
Well, and they spoiled Doomsday in Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice.
True.
And look, if you read the comics or you read Funeral for a Friend or whatever, like, if you've read those arcs, which, you know, I was a total nerd when I was younger and I bought all of those comics, but like, and they're all wrapped in sleeves back at my parents' house, like tucked away in a shoebox somewhere or whatever. But the point is, like, they spoil, and this is the problem. This is why I'm like really protective of the Star Wars property. You know, I'm a Star Wars geek.
Right.
I'm a film critic, but I'm a Star Wars geek. I feel like we still haven't seen anything of what's going to happen in Last Jedi. And I think that's been very good. I think we have an idea, but I don't think it, I think we've been misled in a lot of good ways. And I think we're going to have a lot of pleasant surprises when we see that film. And some will be devastating, too. Which is, you know, the sign of a good second installment, much like Empire was in that saga of films. But with this, yeah, like, they spoil Superman coming back. Well, cool. I know what's going to happen. You know, and look, here's the thing. You got two guys on this podcast right now who have seen it and one who hasn't. And yes, we have talked about Superman, but you know, you knew Superman was going to be in the movie anyway.
Oh, hell yeah.
They told you he was going to be in the movie. You know what I mean? Like, where's the mystery? There was none. So then when you walk into this film, it feels like it's just a brainless, you know, action film with, you know, just tissue paper thin villains that have moment after moment of I'm a really bad guy. And then in the end just gets whooped six ways from Sunday. And that's just like, I don't care. You know, I just don't care.
It really.
And that's upsetting.
Yeah, I think upsetting is a good way.
How many times have you seen that, too, you know?
Like, where DC movies just devolve. I mean, they might even start out with a decent premise, and then it just devolves into a mindless CGI fight.
Right. It does. And that's, it's, you know, I understand if you're building an action film story or a comic book arc, you know, of into films, you got to have your action beats. It's like in a musical. You got to have your musical, you know, interludes and your musical songs that have to pop in, and they help tell the story. But here's the thing. A lot of the action sequences don't help tell the story. They just don't. The one that came close was the fight between Batman and Superman in Dawn of Justice. But then when you realize where that film was going and how it ended, it didn't really matter.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, aside from one little Deus Ex Machina that did play a hand in the very end. But like, other than that, that could have been, you know, they have a scuffle, you know, they slap each other around a little bit and they're like, all right, look, here's our resources. Let's pull it together. We got this whole idea. Like, none of that happened. It was just like mindless, done. And we're out. Oh, by the way, get ready for Justice League. Like, that's it. Now,
get
look,
hyped.
Wonder Woman was good. So I'm not going to say they're batting zero. All right. But on the whole, it's just upsetting.
Yeah.
Every time.
One thing I want to bring up, your last point is, there's been a little bit of backlash. You know what? Maybe not a little bit, quite a bit of backlash at Rotten Tomatoes right now because they decided to hold over and not reveal their tomato meter score for Justice League until after the film had already started being released and they showed it on their new program that they do. I think it's on Facebook. It's called See It or Skip It. And they decided that that was going to be part of the show, was to do the tomato meter reveal for Justice League. Now, what's really making people upset is that Warner Brothers owns a financial stake in Rotten Tomatoes. And there's some question as to whether or not that was, oh, we really want to promote viewership to our new show, or if it was, hey, Warner Brothers, the investors, are knocking at the door saying, don't release that tomato meter rating until we get our opening box off, until we've already got people coming in, then you can do it before it's once it's already too late.
Right.
And so I'm curious. I'm very curious as to both you, Blake, and Connor, what do you think the deal is? Was this a little bit of collusion, or was it really, oh, we want to drive viewership to our new show?
Yeah, that's a tough question.
I don't see how it can't be both. Yeah. I just used a double negative for the second time in this podcast. But I don't see how you can avoid saying that it's possibly both. I mean, one, we have a new property. We want to make sure that it succeeds. If this is where we want to do this unveiling, that's cool. By the way, it's going to look really self-serving, and it is. And,
oh, extremely.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's – and here's the thing. It doesn't help. Like, if people see a really bad score, they're not – you know, okay, first of all, people will go see this film. They will. Not as many as, you know, before, probably, because of the backlash and the scathing, you know, reviews that people are seeing and all of this stuff. You know, diehard faithfuls are going to go. And they're either going to say, oh, you know what, it was good, I liked it, or, oh, it was trash and I hated it. I don't think there's going to be a lot of middle ground on this one.
No, not
really. As opposed to, you know, and there might have been some middle ground with Dawn of Justice, maybe. Because, again, it had nuggets, but it's just garbage on the whole. It's just mindless and all over the place. And
yeah.
You don't care. They don't make you care. Their script writing for all of these films has been very, you know, not so much building into characters I care about. And that's a very big difference from the way things have gone on the other side of the street, so to speak. But no, with this, I think that it just totally looked, and again, Court of Public Opinion is going to rule heavier than the three of us, but
sure.
I think it did look like Warner Brothers had a hand in this. And I'm not saying they did or didn't, but if you have a controlling stake and you're going to withhold the metric meter rating on your biggest property to date in this universe of films that you're trying to build, it just looks bad. It looks really, really bad.
Connor, what do you think?
Yeah, well, Warner Brothers, they had what, a 46% stake in Rotten Tomatoes? Is that
yeah,
right?
something to that effect. Like a pretty big financial stake in Rotten Tomatoes.
And Justice League also is their big, it's their next tentpole. It's like basically their Avengers. You know, it's, I pretty much agree with Blake. It's hard not to view it as just sort of a bullshit business tactic to withdraw the tomato meter, hide it from people as long as you possibly can, especially if, you know, they watched the movie and they know that it's not going to be that good.
Well, it's too bad because, I mean, clearly they want this new show, See It or Skip It, to be a success. I watched like a preview for it. It looks interesting. I'd like another, television style movie review program. I've been missing I used to watch At the Movies all the time, and I've been waiting for someone to come along and do something like that again, because it was so magical for me. Like it taught me the language. It taught me the language of how to talk about movies. And, I don't want to, you know, throw too much shade on them, because really, I bet the people involved really had nothing to do with it. They were just like, okay, so this is going to be our big hook. But now it looks like they're totally compliant in some sort of corporate, like, scheme to get people to go see this movie.
Right. And, well, here's the thing, too, and I think it's something we just haven't touched on yet. The DC Universe, Warner Brothers here, has pushed two major tentpole films in one calendar year. That I think for them, because of the, you know, the lack of, you know, films that they've made on the whole for this universe that they're trying to build, was a little too risky. And I think that given the director swap and all of the things that we've discussed about how embattled this was, they should have waited until next year. They should have tried to like push their schedule, move everything around so that Justice League succeeds. And then when they realized that they couldn't, and they wanted to make sure that, you know, look, this movie's going to kind of be what it's going to be. It's hard for me not to think that that there was a corporate, you know, little smackdown on this. And I'm not one who thinks like that, like, oh, they're, you know, it's this huge conspiracy. No, like, I just think it was, the movie's not very good, guys. Like, we need to make sure we can protect this as much as we can and you know, make sure that it has a good open.
Right. It's just
and that's
like,
all it was.
It's just a strategy.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like when movies, they're just like, yeah, no reviews ahead of the street date. You know, it's a common tactic. So, which just sucks because it's like, yeah, they wanted to show that they had faith in it, but I guess maybe they didn't. Maybe they didn't have as much faith in it as we might have been led to believe. Blake, I want to ask you one last question here, and this has to do with Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic, this whole idea of these metrics sites. Are they fair? Is it fair to go on Rotten Tomatoes, look at the tomato meter, or go on Metacritic and look at that aggregate score and get a real picture of whether or not you should go see this movie?
I think that at a base level, if you are the most casual of moviegoers, and you, for example, if you're a married couple that just had a kid, you know, or a couple that just had a kid, and you know you may get one night out a week, Rotten Tomatoes is good for you. Because it gives you a sense of what's out. It gives you a sense of how things are looked, you know, like, is this good or is this bad? It's also putting everything in front of you. And it's saying, hey, like, here's what's available. And you can pick your movie time and everything. So if schedule for you is not, an easy thing for you to go to the movies, yes, I think it's fair and I think it's good for you. But if you're a moviegoer, a movie lover, or somebody who tries to do two, maybe three movies a week, because we do exist and it's okay to be a cinephile.
Oh, thank God.
I don't think it is fair. I think that I find myself disagreeing with it much more and more. I would say that it is nice to see certain films that I didn't think based on trailers were going to do too well that do okay, critically at least. I do like that they tell you what's making money and what's not making money so that you know that, you know, if you like going to the movies and then talking about them. So it's to me, it's such a mixed bag of an answer, and I don't like to be wishy-washy about it. But yes and no is the easiest way to say it, because I know right now, you know, I'm 32 years old and I'm amongst a group of people age wise who, you know, are starting families and everything. So going to the movies isn't the easiest thing anymore.
Yeah.
So Rotten Tomatoes helps them out. Because and Metacritic, because it provides an aggregate. It gives them a sense of like what they might like and not like, and they can try to find their taste maybe based on time, you know, something that's time sensitive. But if you're a person who loves going to the movies and talking about movies, and maybe if you are one of those people but only get to go once a week, I don't think it's fair enough, because you're probably a little more affluent to, you know, what's going to be good, what's going to be bad, what, you know, movie marketing wise kind of hooked people and then disappointed in the end, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, it's just another thing. I don't look at it. I'm kind of ambivalent towards it. And I think it's okay to be ambivalent towards things. I don't hate it and I don't love it, but I do try to make sure that people don't base all of their movie going and movie viewing and movie discussion, you know, sentiments and thoughts and reactions based on a Rotten Tomatoes or a Metacritic. I hope that answers the question. Really.
I think it definitely does. I think I'm very satisfied with that. Blake Stubbs, constant contributor to WGN. He is one of the great movie thinkers, I think, that I, in my opinion, of that I've really ever talked to. Blake, where can we find you on social media?
Easiest place to find me right now is on Twitter at Blake Stubbs. I am always up for arguing about films or just straight up talking about them, and, you know, gushing, because gushing's fun. If you get to gush about a movie, like, you know, something you loved, I like being on every end of that spectrum. So yeah, at Blake Stubbs on Twitter, best way to get at me directly.
All right, Blake, thank you so much for coming on the show, and let's definitely talk soon. There's plenty of releases coming out. I know by the end of this year, I'm gonna be dragging you here to the studio from Champaign. I'm gonna need to talk to you about some things. Thank you so much. Have a good one.
Oh, thanks, guys. Total pleasure. Can't wait to do it again.
All right. We will be right back with a little bit more No Coast Cinema. We're going to move away from Justice League and talk a little bit about some movies that Connor and I have watched this week. Stick around.
Never know.
Welcome back, everybody. A little bit more No Coast Cinema for you. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And right now, now that we've kind of talked ourselves out about Justice League, let us never speak of it again.
Strike it from the record.
Dude! Strike it from the record.
Strike. It is struck.
It is struck.
It's been struck.
Oh, boy. We need to do more morning zoo style voices.
Yeah.
I think that's really the future of podcasting.
I totally agree. That and Brooklyn accents.
Brooklyn. I don't know what that was.
It was it was somebody that drops the last letter of every word.
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
No, Kasham. All right. So right now, to close the show, I kind of just wanted to take a moment to talk a little bit about some movies that Connor and I have seen in the last week. You know, we're constantly watching movies, probably too many movies. I kind of moving myself out yesterday, but we'll get to that. Connor, I know you watched a couple of films this week, one new, one older. Mm-hmm. So hit me. What'd you watch?
So I just watched the movie Atonement. I watched this one at home.
Keira Knightley. Yep. James McAvoy.
So you see Ronan getting her start there.
Yeah, that's... Oh, wow. She's young in that, too.
How do you pronounce that name? Saoirse? Saoirse?
I really wish I could
I'm
tell
throwing
you.
Another R in there, and there's only one.
I always say Saoirse.
Saoirse.
I feel like I should be able to say it because, like, she's Irish, and I'm Irish, and I've been around weird Irish names, but I've literally never met an Irish person with that name before. So that's on us. Please tweet at us your pronunciation of Saoirse Ronan. At No Coast on Twitter. But, okay, Atonement.
Yeah.
What's the premise here? What's the premise of the movie?
So, James McAvoy is a adopted, or I think he's adopted, from this affluent family in right when World War II is starting to... It starts in the mid-30s, so before World War II breaks out. And James McAvoy is in love with Keira Knightley, the daughter of this deceased wealthy person. Mm-hmm. And he falls in love with Keira Knightley, and Keira Knightley sort of returns his affections to him. But there's this subplot with Saoirse Ronan.
Ms. Ronan.
Ms. Ronan. Yeah, where she is a young girl, and she has a crush on James McAvoy, and she sees Keira Knightley and James McAvoy making love in a library in their house. And one of her sisters mysteriously gets sexually assaulted in the woods during a party when James McAvoy is gone.
Yeah.
And so he being this, you know, being just this person that the family took under their wing, it was an easy scapegoat. And Saoirse Ronan, basically Ms. Ronan, said that it was him, that she saw him doing it when... She was sort of spurned. That's what the implication of the film is, that she was spurned by her crush for him, and so she wanted to kind of get back at him. And what you find out at the end of the movie, and this isn't really much of a spoiler, but you find out that all of the events that you watch throughout the movie was in a book that the character ends up writing at the end of her life called Atonement. Because she felt so bad that she knew that James... She finds out later that James McAvoy was innocent, and she basically spends her whole life, and you follow her throughout various periods of her life, being a nurse in World War II, and how she lives her life basically as a result of this one decision that she made when she was young.
Huh.
And it was a great movie. I loved it.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds really good. I mean, I'm down for that era of... Of, like, you know, watching a movie that takes place. I like World War II movies that aren't, like, about World War II. You know what I mean? And I think I saw parts of it. I know something about it is that people, Dunkirk came out earlier this year. And it's like, oh, it's the first depiction of the Battle of Dunkirk. It's actually not. Atonement is.
Dunkirk is, yeah, absolutely.
He's at Dunkirk,
yep.
And that's the first depiction, the first big depiction of the Battle of Dunkirk on the film.
That's interesting. I forgot about that. I didn't realize.
No, I think people kind of write, I mean, that seems like the kind of movie that could be a little bit too gooey. Like, how does it play the romance?
It starts, so the romance is a very short-lived thing. It's definitely the thing that ties the characters together, but
it's not like the focus of the film.
No,
it's more about
it serves. It is sort of it's a focus, but it's something that sort of lends to the drama and sort of the heartbreak of all of the different characters.
Sure.
and their individual struggles, because that's really the majority of the movie. It starts out in this very bougie environment where you think, oh, it's
very
just going
like,
to be...
like Downton Abbey sort of thing.
Exactly. You're afraid that that's going to be the whole movie, and then it quickly turns into like a dramatic disaster.
Very cool. What was the other movie you watched?
Went to the theater and saw The Killing of a Sacred Deer,
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah, his new film.
And another name I have trouble pronouncing.
Yeah, really picked a good lottery with that.
So a lot of people would know him as the director of The Lobster.
And Dogtooth.
Dogtooth, yes. I'm going to say this up front. I did not really like The Lobster all that much. I wanted to. I feel like through almost two-thirds of the movie, I was really about it. And then it just got so... it went so elsewhere for me, and I feel bad because I was like, man, am I not edgy enough to watch The Lobster? Like, am I not fucking cool enough to watch The Lobster? But I tried watching it again, and it's like, it's a fucked up movie.
Oh, yeah. I think it's like the reckoning of the romantic comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, maybe I should watch it again with that in mind, be like, okay, so this is a romantic, the most anti-romantic comedy ever made.
Yeah.
So how was The Killing of the Sacred Deer?
So with his other movies in mind, particularly, I guess, just drawing on The Lobster, it establishes its internal logic, because that's a big thing with his movies. He has logic and sort of a fantastical element to his movie. It's
very magical realism.
Yeah, and in The Lobster, he established it pretty much right away, and it's just sort of this flat line of unpleasantness throughout the whole thing.
True.
With The Killing of a Sacred Deer... it starts out in this way. You don't really know what's happening, and it's very unpleasant to start with. And then at the end, it's just sort of this steady incline of unpleasantness all the way until the very end. And I remember being in the theater. I was with a couple friends, and when it ended, we saw it on a Friday night. And when it ended, the credits start rolling. Somebody just in the audience just goes like, "God damn it." And then we were walking out, I heard another person say, he's like, "So this is why I don't go to movies anymore."
Yeah, jeez.
Because
I can't imagine that that's a movie that would make you feel good on a Friday night.
No, we felt so... We left the theater and we were like, okay, what do we do now? Like, I guess go get a drink and
drink
try to
talk
this
until
out.
Drink whiskey until we die.
Yeah, exactly. We have to talk this out. It's definitely one of those movies where you're going to want to discuss it for a while afterwards, because... it's just, you're not going to feel good after seeing it.
I can't imagine. I can't, from what I've seen in the trailers, I was just like, okay, here we go. Like,
yeah. But it's effective. Effective unpleasantness. Absolutely.
Would you recommend a watch?
Yes, I do. I think it's
like,
good.
Go out and see it or wait?
I would say go out and see it. I think it's a good movie. It's A24. They really don't disappoint these days, I don't think.
That is true. There
it's
are very few.
Shot.
Yeah, there are very few A24 movies that I like completely hate. That's interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely going to go see it. Well, especially because I saw Mother in theaters, and that was a movie I wanted to talk about, but no one wanted to fucking talk about it because they're like, oh, I hate Mother, or like, I'm not going to go see it. It looks stupid. And I'm just like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to keep this to myself forever until I fucking die. Like, I personally really liked Mother. That was truly a visceral experience. So I'd be interested. I'll give Yorgos another chance. I don't think you could ever bring me around to The Lobster, because it was just a level of unpleasantness that I couldn't even like enjoy. Like movies like Raw. Like we both have you seen?
Yeah, yeah.
We both
great.
Saw Raw,
yeah.
And that's a lot of unpleasantness. But like you're drawn to it in a way because there's so much more going on.
Well, his characters are so far different too than most other filmmakers.
They're like barely even people.
Yeah,
they
don't act at all. That's what he tells his actors is he says do as little as possible.
Yeah,
and I know Nicole Kidman is in this movie, Killing of a Sacred Deer. I watched an interview with her and she
Colin
was like,
Farrell again as well.
Yeah, and she just said Yorgos wants you to do as little as possible, and when you're an actor, that's difficult.
Yeah. That's interesting. Well, I got to put it on my list.
Yeah.
There's another, too many movies I got to catch.
Another cool, quick undercurrent to that movie is it's basically based off of a Greek myth called the Myth of Iphigenia.
Oh.
And it is mentioned very briefly in the film, which is something I caught and I had to look it up after.
Yeah.
But
was it cool afterwards knowing that?
Like, yes.
Did it change? And it kind of did change your perspective?
It...
Or did it just give you context?
It just gave you context, okay. Which was cool.
That is cool. No, I like when movies are kind of weird, like, adaptations. Like The Little Hours.
Exactly.
Like, The Little Hours is an adaptation of a book called The Decameron, but it, you know, with the cast of Parks and Rec.
But with a movie that is that unpleasant, it's nice to know that it didn't just come out of the void, you know?
Yeah, it wasn't just Yorgos Lanthimos being like, how much can I fucking ruin someone's night?
Yeah.
Like, he's like...
in a Greek tragedy.
Yeah, tragedy. Yeah, I like tragedies. Okay, yeah. It's on the list now.
There you go.
All right.
What did you watch, Tom?
Say it again?
So what did you watch, Tom?
I had a big day yesterday. I've definitely had a lot of trouble this week being able to sit down and focus. So I was just like, I've been meaning to watch this for a while, and I would like start watching it, and I couldn't focus. Like, I went to go watch the Royal Tenenbaums, and I got about halfway through it, and then like I was just getting too distracted, and I was like, fuck, I really want to enjoy this movie, so maybe I shouldn't watch it right now. But yesterday I made a point to go to a great screening over at the Music Box. They were doing a 70mm screening of Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo, starring James Stewart, Kim Novak as well, and I had never seen Vertigo. Have you seen Vertigo?
I have not. No.
I've watched Hitchcock movies from like my mid to late teens. Like that's when I kind of really actually I saw Psycho, and now I watch it like pretty regularly. I love Psycho. I've seen Rope, which is a really interesting movie, but.
I feel like the only three I've seen, Birds, Secret Window, and Psycho. I think that might be the
Wait,
only
do you mean
three.
Rear Window?
Rear Window. Secret Window with Johnny Depp. God damn it. Fuck. Dan, strike it from the record.
Dan! So I'd never seen Vertigo, and I can't remember which poll it was, but there was like a recent critics poll that named it as the greatest movie ever made. I was like, fuck. Like... I don't know. And
after seeing it, what do you think?
I don't think it's the greatest movie ever made. I think it is one of the great movies. I think it's tough because you're watching a movie. I feel like every decade we get further removed from this. Like it's got to be hard to like when you're watching an old movie, you almost have to re-educate yourself on what movies were like then. And there are portions that are timeless, but there were also parts that I was just like, fuck, like I can't believe this is in a movie. And then the newer film that I saw was Lady Bird, directed by Greta Gerwig,
also A24,
also starring Miss Ronan.
Mm-hmm.
in a fantastic leading role. She does a great job. I think this is the first movie I've really watched by her that I was like, damn, she is so talented. It's semi-autobiographical. Takes place in Sacramento in 2002, which is really weird because you're kind of like, oh shit, like that's when I was a kid.
Yeah. You know?
And granted, she's in high school in 2002. We were what?
Eight
years old. But it's interesting to be watching a movie that is, you know, we grew up watching movies that called back to the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
As like youth culture was the 80s and 90s. And then you watch Dazed and Confused calls back. So it's weird to be seeing movies that now call back to our youth as youth culture. Like it was a very surreal experience. And I was just like, man, I kind of like remember all of this. Like, you know, there's... in the background, like she'll be watching CNN and it's the beginning of the Iraq War.
Oh, yeah.
Like, which is kind of weird. And it's nothing to do with the plot. It's just all scene setting and kind of gives you a sense of time and place. But it's a great coming-of-age story. Ms. Ronan is fantastic. It feels very real. It feels very funny. I guess you could maybe say that it's a little bit too Juno-esque. Like, it doesn't have that heightened of dialogue, but sometimes you have a little... I can see people having a little trouble believing that a high school senior talks like that.
Sure.
But I've never had a problem with Juno, and I didn't have a problem with it now. It was just kind of a devil's advocate thing I was playing in my mind. Laurie Metcalf plays her mom, and a lot of people know Laurie Metcalf. I think she was on Roseanne, I want to say. I could be totally wrong, but Laurie Metcalf's been around for a while, and she is fantastic as her mom. Tracy Letts, author of August Osage County, the like famous playwright over here at Steppenwolf. He's part of the Steppenwolf. He's got a new play for Steppenwolf. He's in it as Lady Bird's father. The whole thing is just a really great coming-of-age comedy, very, very quick, very witty, very effective. Shout out to Greta Gerwig. I loved Frances Ha. I loved her in 20th Century Women. And I'm glad that she's got a directorial debut now under her belt.
Would you say that, because Juno's pretty strong on comedy and obviously being witty, would you say that Lady Bird is outright a comedy, or is it a mixed bag?
I would say, I think dramedy is a good way to put it, but it is so funny. Like, it's funny in the way that, like, your fucked up childhood experiences are funny in retrospect.
Yeah.
Like, at the time, if you think about it, like, she'll be there, like, smoking clove cigarettes and, like, lying to her friends about her wealth. And there's like, all the stuff about class struggle and money trouble and this mother-daughter relationship that is very serious. And, like, there's relationships and sex and all that kind of stuff. But it's funny in that just quick-witted look back at one's youth that, I mean, clearly Greta Gerwig is drawing. She's from Sacramento, Greta Gerwig. So she's clearly drawing on these experiences. And, I mean, you know, there's experiences in your life, Connor, I'm sure, that you look back on and you're just like, wow, that was weird.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
And it's funny. At the time, it felt so serious. And there are plenty of serious, really great emotional beats in this movie, but a lot of it is just so funny and just so true. I think there's a line that really kind of sets up, like, people who would crap on this movie because it's like, what's up with witty Juno teenager? Like, blah, blah, blah. This is fake. Like, this is not how teenagers talk. And there's a bit where she's in a theater group, like she's getting involved in musical theater, and like her director is this, she goes to Catholic school, she's got this priest as the director, and he says something to the effect of, it's not about being accurate, it's about being true. And he's talking about their performances as actors. It's not about being accurate, it's about being true.
Yeah,
which
I what's
really
truer
like.
Than the truth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to another episode of No Coast Cinema. Remember, you can find all the things that we're talking about over at facebook.com/NoCoastCinemaPodcast. We're posting on there episodes, different articles. You know, please share your thoughts with us. If you liked Justice League, if you didn't like Justice League, give us a shout out. What are you watching? Let us know. You can also tweet us at No Coast Cinema on Twitter. And I know you can follow me on Instagram at Mount Hushmore. Connor, do you want people to publicly follow your weird shit?
No.
Well,
why
there you
stay
go.
The hell away from me?
Yeah, Connor is an enigma. All right. We'll see you guys next week. Very excited to be back, and hopefully sickness will not strike us again. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we all love you very much.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah.